God in the Bible goes to great lengths to impress man with the evil that sin is. We do this with our children. Remember when you were potty training your children? You did various things to affect the way, not just what they do. It's not just that you tell them, okay, don't do that, do it over here on the toilet. You try to get them to think about things in a way that will facilitate the transition. And of course, there's the positive side of it. There's the, you know, anytime anything is done in the inappropriate place, it's a big celebration. It's, oh yay, look at what little one did. Oh, come look, you know, this kind of thing. And we're not the only ones that did that, are we? And then on the other hand, you want to create in them a real distaste, displeasure, in the stuff that's in their diaper, so that they don't want to sit in it. And so you talk, and in our household, the way this was done was, and this was Libby's brilliant contribution. Shoo-wee! And so our children grew up thinking that was the name of waste. It was shoo-wee. That's what you called it. In Guatemala, our grandchildren growing up in Guatemala, their mother decided she would talk to them about how it's dirty. And so the word for dirty in Spanish is sucio. So she goes, sucio! And so they grew up thinking that sucio is the word for waste. Well, all of that is just to illustrate the point that what we are trying to do is create not just you shall do this, you shall not do that, but create a mindset. We're trying to brainwash them is what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a mindset in these children that will help them do what they need to do. In so many ways in the Bible, God has tried to help us to see the great wonders of righteousness and the being in God's ways, and at the same time, how utterly despicable sin is. When you think about all those dietary regulations, you'll eat this, you won't eat that. A lot of times people are confused by that. Why does God just give them a bunch of arbitrary rules? And we've talked about the fact that as you study those rules, you come to see that in general, God was creating a disgust in the Israelites for everything associated with death and decay. Most of the things that they could not eat were things that either killed other things or ate dead things or lived in the decaying matter of other things and that kind of thing. You're not going to eat those. You're not going to eat catfish. They go around, swim on the bottom of the lake and eat all the scum down there. They're scum-sucking catfish. You're not going to eat those things. And sin results in death. And if God can create in man a distaste, a disgust for anything associated with death and decay, then the idea is that will be transferred to sin, and man's attitude towards sin will be what it ought to be. The laws in the Old Testament about leprosy, similarly. We could go throughout the Bible and we could see many ways in which God does this. But I want to talk this morning just about four passages that put sin in a bad light. And we need to let the Bible have that effect on us. Because too often we desire something that is sinful, or we want to do something. That's why people sin. People don't sin because it's not fun. They sin because they want to. And if we can change our minds to the degree that we find sin more repulsive than desirable, then we're protecting ourselves. I just want to pick out four passages this morning. And the first one is Exodus, the 5th chapter. And what we have here in Exodus, the 5th chapter, is a picture of slavery. And that's one of the pictures of sin in the Bible, is that it is slavery. And if you want a picture of slavery, think of the Israelites under Pharaoh. And I want to go on and read a little bit more from this chapter. Ephesians, the 5th chapter, you left off at verse 9. By the way, Noah, I really appreciated the introduction. When Noah, when he got up, he told us what this text is about. Set the context for us. That's helpful. I'm going to continue starting in verse 10, Exodus 5. So the taskmasters of the people and their foreman went out and spoke to the people saying, thus says Pharaoh, I'm not going to give you any straw. You go and get straw for yourselves wherever you can find it. None of your labor will be reduced. You still got to do just as much work, but you got to go get your own straw now. So the people scattered through all the land of Egypt to gather stubble for straw. And the taskmasters pressed them saying, complete your work quota, your daily amount, just as when you had straw. Moreover, the foremen of the sons of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten and were asked, why have you not completed your required amount either yesterday or today in making brick as previously? And of course, then what would that do in terms of how would that affect the relationship between the foreman and the Israelites? It's going to go sour. Then the foreman of the sons of Israel came and cried out to Pharaoh saying, why do you deal this way with your servants? Well, because you're slaves. That's what happens to slaves. Verse 16, there's no straw given to your servants, yet they keep saying to us, make bricks. And behold, your servants are being beaten, but it's the fault of your own people. But he said, you are lazy, very lazy. Therefore you say, let us go and sacrifice the Lord. So go now and work, for you shall be given no straw, yet you must deliver the quota of bricks. And the foreman of the sons of Israel saw that they were in trouble because they were told, you must not reduce your daily amount of bricks. And when they left Pharaoh's presence, they met Moses and Aaron as they were waiting for them. And they said to them, may the Lord look upon you and judge you, for you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight and in the sight of his servants to put a sword in their hand to kill us. They had no choice in this matter. And whatever their taskmasters wanted to do to them, whatever Pharaoh wanted to do to them, he had power over them. That's what slavery is like. And in the Bible, we're pictured as being enslaved to sin. They couldn't escape, and we can't escape our sin, not without help from God. We can't do anything to get rid of our sin. The sacrifice of Jesus can get rid of it. These people could not just walk away from their tasks. They could not just walk away from Egypt. Pharaoh had power over them, unless God would rescue them. There's another side or another aspect of this that came out in the part that Noah read. Escape isn't easy. Things can get worse before they get better. If you do try to get out of the situation, things can get really bad. Here, God is going to extricate the people from slavery, and he sends Moses and Aaron and says, Pharaoh, let the people go 3 days' journey out into the wilderness to worship. And the reaction is, verse 7, you're no longer to give the people straw to make brick as previously. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. And the end result is the people say, you've made things worse for us. And I want to tell you, when we find ourselves in some kind of sin, we can sometimes find that once we've gotten into it, getting out of it, things can get worse before they get better. Think about embezzling money. Say you've decided you're going to embezzle money and you do this for a little while and then you decide, you know what, I'm going to get in trouble. I need to just get out of this. And so you go to the boss and you fess up. That's the right thing to do. But what's likely to be the next thing that's going to happen? You're likely to get fired. And you're probably not going to get a very good recommendation from your latest employer as you go looking for another job. In other words, once we go down the path of sin and then we start trying to get out of it, it's not easy. Now, Jesus Christ can get us out of it, but there are going to be consequences. There's all kinds of situations where we can get ourselves into a problem. You know, maybe somebody's having an affair and then he decides he better break it off and he starts getting blackmailed. And now what does he do? Well, he's got messed up. Well, when he does, his wife may leave him. Sometimes it's going to get worse before it gets better. And what we're going to have to do is just understand those are the consequences of my actions. Let me put my trust in the Lord and know that in the end there is a victory. Second thing that I want to say, the second passage I want to look at with you is Judges chapter 2 verses 1 through 3. And this really comes out of the lesson material that we are working through, the adult class is working through. How far did you get through Joshua today, or what are you ready for next week?
We're still on that same.
Still, okay. So in a couple.
22 around that question.
Well, next week or the following week, you'll be in Judges. And it was in preparing the material for Judges that came across a thought that really is kind of behind this lesson. And it's the idea that we see in Judges chapter 2, verses 1 and 3. Sin is compounded. If you don't get rid of the little sin in your life, there'll be more. In Judges chapter 2, in verses 1 through 3, the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land which I've sworn to your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And as for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land, but you shall tear down their altars. The problem is, the Israelites did not thoroughly do that. They did make covenants with the people. And what's the result? You've not obeyed me. What is this you've done? Therefore I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become as thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare to you. It's the camel's nose, little nose under the tent, and then before long, the whole camel has worked his way under the tent and is inside with you. Well, here the Israelites, they put up with a little bit of association with the pagans, made some covenants with them, and so on. And so God says, I'll not drive them out before you. They'll become as thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you. And so now that the land, it becomes filled with the influence of paganism, and the Israelites have great troubles as a result of it. James chapter 4 and verse 7 says, submit therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. That's the approach we need to have. When we leave that old man behind, when we put that old man to death, when we're buried with Christ, and we become a new man, let's not try to hold on to some of those ways of the old man. They'll become a snare to us, and it'll be compounded. It would get bigger and bigger. You look at Lot, who, when he and Abraham are going to divide up the land, Abram's going to go one way, Lot's going to go the other. Lot chose to go to Sodom. And that's in Genesis, the 13th chapter. And right there in Genesis, the 13th chapter, in verse 13, where Lot chooses to go to the region of Sodom because the land was well watered there, it tells us the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked. What was Lot doing? He was making a decision based on material needs and desires and not considering spiritual influences, and he could put up with a little wickedness, put up with a little evil. And the result was he ended up being captured, and he ended up living in a city where he was tormented from day to day by the lascivious doings of the people around him. And that city ended up being destroyed, and he ended up losing his wife. David is an example of somebody who committed one sin, and it grew into another one. What he did was he committed adultery. He took another man's wife, and it grew into a bigger sin as he tried to cover it up, and ends up having the woman's husband murdered. There's this concept of leaven. In the Old Testament, in the Israelites, among the Israelite people, when they were in Egypt, and they're going to come out of Egypt, And God brings the plagues upon the Egyptians, and there's that tenth plague where the death of the firstborn of all the Egyptians takes place. But the Israelites are spared because they kill the lamb and they put the blood over the doorpost and the lintel. And so the Lord passes over and does not take the firstborn. We all remember that story. Do remember that God said, now, you eat that lamb without any leaven, and for 7 days, you remove all of the leaven in your home. All of it. Don't have any leaven. Leaven is used in the Bible. We talked about this in our class this morning. Leaven is used in the Bible both for a positive influence and also as a symbol for a negative influence. But the idea is it has influence. In this situation, the idea is it's a negative influence. You let a little leaven sit there in your life, and it's going to fester, and it's going to, does leaven fester? I think it may be mixing metaphors there. But that's what it's going to do. Its influence is going to spread throughout your life, and you're going to have greater problems. Sin is compounded. When we look at our lives and we start thinking about, I want to be a Christian. I want to leave the old man behind. And then we say, but I've been dating this guy, and he's a nice guy. He's not a Christian. He's an unbeliever. What am I doing? I'm trying to hold on to a negative influence, and that's going to create problems down the road. Entertainment. we want to hold on to some of those things that we used to enjoy being entertained by, some worldly kinds of things, and it's going to create problems. And it's leaven in our lives, and it's going to be compounded. We just need to get rid of it completely. What did I do with my clicker? I need to just get a Velcro thing on the side of my jacket. Let's use this one. Here's another one. This will do it. The third passage I want you to look at with me is Isaiah, the 64th chapter in verse 7. Now, this reads a little bit differently in the King James and as compared with some of the other translations. I'm reading from the New American Standard. In Isaiah 64, verse 7, the last part of the verse, I'll just put it on screen here. It says, "You have hidden your face from us," speaking to God, "and have delivered us into the power of our iniquities." Now, the King James says something like, by our iniquities. But this says, "You've delivered us into the power of our iniquities." I want you to think about that concept, that our sin, our iniquities have power, and when we go down the road of sin, that they can overpower us. Well, certainly, if we go down the road of sin, we're overpowered by sin. But look at what I mean. Turn over to Ezekiel, the 16th chapter, or I'll put it on screen here. In Ezekiel, the 16th chapter, the prophet of God is telling the people that they've been like a woman whom God has taken for his bride, and then he has bestowed great gifts upon her. And then she has taken those gifts, and she has given them to her illicit lovers. And so she, the nation of Israel, is compared to an adulteress. And the idea is, when you go and you worship these pagan gods, you're being unfaithful to your God, who is your husband. Look what God says he'll do. Verse 39. "I will also give you into the hands of your lovers, and they will tear down your shrines." These are the very lovers that she has gone to. They'll tear down your shrines, demolish your high places, strip you of your clothing, take away your jewels, will leave you naked and bare. They will incite a crowd against you, and they will stone you and cut you to pieces with their swords. And they will burn your houses with fire and execute judgments on you in the sight of many women. Then I will stop you from playing the harlot, and you also will no longer pay your lovers. There's some things where it's obvious. There are addictive behaviors that are sinful activities, and whether it's drugs or whether it's gambling or whether it's alcohol or whether it's pornography, but there are various behaviors that are sinful that we can get ourselves into, and we can pursue these things because they have an allure, and yet they destroy us. Drugs, they can destroy a man's mind. They can destroy a person's health. Pornography, they can destroy a man's mind. It can destroy a man's relationship with his wife. You think about alcohol, how it can destroy a man's life. But these things, but we want these things. Gambling, sin is an evil thing. God didn't just come up with an arbitrary list of things. Let's see, I've got to make sure it's not easy to go to heaven. What's some things I can tell him not to do? God is trying to protect us from things that are destructive to us and those around us. What did Jesus say? The whole law and all the prophets, he says, all summed up in what? Love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. That's the first and great commandment. And the second like unto it is, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. All these commandments that God gives us, they are helping us understand how to love God, how to love our neighbor. They're not arbitrary thou shalt nots. He's telling us what is good for us and how we can be a blessing to those around us. So sin is evil. It's destructive. And then the last passage that I want to call your attention to, it's another passage just showing how evil sin is Romans the 7th chapter. In Romans 7, verse 13, the context is, Paul has been showing that the law is good. The problem isn't that the law is bad, but the law is what condemns man. And if it weren't, if there were no law, then you wouldn't be guilty. But there's a law, and now I'm condemned. So does that mean the law is bad? No, the law is good. The problem is man's conduct. And so in verse 13 he says, therefore did that which is good become a cause of death for me? You can imagine maybe Paul's readers would say that. What are you saying, Paul? He's saying, you say the law is the problem? Well, then let's get rid of the law. Well, no, it's not the law per se that's the problem. The law is good. Well, what are you saying, Paul? That a good thing is bringing about my death? Well, think of it this way. It was sin in order that it might be shown to be sin by affecting my death through that which is good, so that through the commandment, sin would become utterly sinful. I've summed it up. Sin's rightful punishment is death. If sin's rightful punishment is death, if that's the appropriate response to sin, what does that tell you about sin? If you have a good, healthy finger or good, healthy skin cells, you're not going to go cutting those off. But if you get cancer, what's the rightful way to deal with that? Kill it. Get rid of it. Get it out of there. Well, why would you do that? Because it's evil. Well, when you have a good law, and that good law says, you know, the appropriate response to sin is death, what does that tell you sin is? It should tell us sin must be pretty bad. Sin must be evil. In Isaiah, the 53rd chapter, what we see here is Jesus' suffering was made necessary by our sin. You think about the agony that he endured on the cross, how cruelly he was treated. You think about the hours during the night before he was crucified, and when they're slapping him around and saying, prophesy, tell us who did that to you. And they're mocking him, and they put the crown of thorns on him and the robe, and they send him out in the crowd, just make fun of the idea that he thinks he's a king. And they scourge him. They take that whip and they lash into his back and tear the flesh off of his back. And then, of course, they take him to the cross and they drive the nails through his hands and through his feet. And if you've ever just sat and imagined that, or if you saw that movie, The Passion of the Christ, and you just think, how awful, how hideous for a person to be treated that way. Understand, that was the rightful punishment, the appropriate response to sin. And he's bearing our sins in his body on the tree. He was made to be sin, made to be our sin on the cross. So there's this passage in Isaiah chapter 53. And in verse 11, it says, as a result of the anguish of his soul, which I take to be the Messiah, the Christ on the cross, as you read the context, he will see it and be satisfied. God, who sends his son to die on the cross, sees this suffering and is satisfied. And it's not a picture of a sadistic God. It's a picture of a God who is punishing our sin. And in order for us to be acquitted of our sin, in order for us to be able to stand before God in the knowledge that our sin is water under the bridge, it's gone, it's been paid for, it had to be punished. And how did God do it? In the cross. So the next time there's something that we know is sinful and we're thinking about, well, you know, maybe just this one time or whatnot, remember that in order for that sin to be properly dealt with, Jesus had to endure the suffering of the cross. That's how bad that sin is. These are the kinds of things that we need to think about to get it in our head, not just, well, I'm not supposed to do this, but this is bad. Sin is a bad thing. Sin is an evil thing. Let's be motivated to turn our lives in service to God. Let's stand and sing the song. It's been